Thank you. Please be seated. You can turn your Bibles to 2 Corinthians chapter 8 today. The topic of what I want to share is called the grace of giving. And I thought it was going to be a really interesting topic to study at this particular time of the year because everything is about giving. Well, actually, it's about getting stuff. I don't know about you, but as each year goes by, I like Christmas less and less. when the children were little, it was a lot of fun to have tree and presents and do stuff for them. And I don't know, it was just a really special time of the year for the family because they were so excited and waking up on Christmas morning. But as the years went by, it got to be where, do I really have to get up? Well, yeah, don't you want your stocking? Well, I don't know, And I think that also it seems like over the years there has been more and more pressure about Christmas too, where it was, I don't know, I remember when I was a child, it was a really special family time. And now, I mean, they start putting out Christmas things after Halloween. And it's all about buying this and buying that and, how much money are you going to spend and all that kind of thing. And so there's this tremendous pressure about Christmas, whether it's the birth of Jesus Christ or not, and some people still really are teaching that, but it's not about that anymore in our culture. It's about presents. And so it's actually about giving, which if we do, and we just take a look this morning briefly about what God's view of giving is, then I think that it will help alleviate some of this pressure about I have to do this. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to go there anymore. I want to do it God's way. And like in the songs that the girls did, they were so appropriate because God is faithful to His word. And when we do it God's way and we see what His principles are and then we apply those in our lives, then we get the results. And it's really easy and it's not full of pressure and it's not full of oppression, you know what I'm saying, where it's pressing down on us. So, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, actually chapters 8 and 9 together, I call them the grace of giving because of these first couple verses here. Chapter 8, verse 1, "Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace bestowed on the churches of Macedonia." it means to know. "We do you to know of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints." You can see in verse 1 there about the grace of God. Now usually we think about grace meaning divine favor or God's favor poured out to us and in terms of spiritual things. Well, giving is a spiritual thing. And in God's mind, it's always grace. It's grace because we have everything that we have belongs to God and was given to us by God. Even our physical things, our financial things, it was given by grace to us to begin with. And so if we give a portion of it, that's actually just giving back of the grace that we already have. Now, as we go along, you're going to see more about this grace. It's used here, it's used in verse 4 where it says, "Take upon us the fellowship of the ministering of the saints. In Aramaic, that word fellowship is grace. And then it's in verse 6. Insomuch that we desired Titus that he, as he had begun, so he would also finish in you the same grace also. Because Titus went to Corinth to teach them about what they should do as far as abundant sharing. And he was put in charge by Paul to minister this grace stuff. And it's in verse 7 as well. As you abound in everything, etc., 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 and in your love to us, see that you abound in this grace also. So it's calling, giving grace. And it's really, really neat when we begin to see how this all works together. Everything we have to give has come from grace, and it's to be given with thanksgiving back to other people and back to God. So now we have to learn a little bit about the background of why this section is in here and why it's in 2 Corinthians. Now 2 Corinthians is of the doctrine, reproof, and correction. Which one is it?
Reproof.
Okay. Corinthians needed, the people in Corinth, they needed some reproof. And not only did they need reproof about what was in 1 Corinthians, about the manifestations and about all the weird stuff that was going on there, they also needed reproof about giving because they didn't understand it. And so Paul uses the churches of Macedonia as an example to the churches in Corinth of what giving should be about. See, he says, I want you to know of the grace of God that was bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. And the churches of Macedonia included Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea, there's some other places. But Philippi and Thessalonica were the part of Macedonia that he's talking about. Now Corinth and Achaia and Athens, they were down in Greece. So that's Philippi and Thessalonica, Macedonia is up here, Greece is down here. And so they really weren't all that far apart from each other. But what Paul is saying is, hey, Philippi had gotten it together about giving. So look at them and see what they're doing, and then you'll understand how these principles work. Now, if you remember, Philippians is where it says, my God shall supply all your need. Says, I don't have to talk to you about giving and receiving because you understand it. So that's why it's in Philippians and why they are the example of what real giving and receiving was all about. So now look here at verse 2. This is what they did. How that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty. I thought giving is supposed to be about abundance here. No, it says, out of their poverty they abounded unto the riches of their liberality. Now, liberality is kind of a strange word in King James. We don't understand it very much. But it actually means simplicity. And in the Eastern way of thinking about simplicity, it's to stretch out the hand with openness. Or to be generous. So to be simple is actually to be generous. It's where you hold out your hand like this. It's an open hand. If you just try it right now. Hold out your hand. Okay, if you have your hand open, if there was something in there, it would be very easy for it to be released. You know, it could fall off. Or you could take it and say, here, Susie, I'm going to give what's in my hand to you. Yeah, see? And so then she can take it out of my open hand and receive it to herself. And that's the basic picture of giving, is that it has to be done with an open hand. See, if I say I'm giving, but I close my hand, nobody can take what's in there because I've got a pretty good tight hold of it. You see? So now what the Philippians and what the Macedonians were doing was that even though they were in some great distress and also poverty, they held their hands open to give, despite that. And they were generous even out of a tight situation. And that's why they're used here as this really great example of giving. Now, we need to just keep our finger here for a moment and go over to John 3:16, which I know that you guys all know, but we're just going to look at it for a minute, because every time you talk about giving, you have to look at how God set the first foundation of what giving really is, and what is its motivation, and what is it supposed to accomplish. He's the epitome of the example of giving, is our Father. And so John 3:16 says, "For God so what? Loved the world that he gave." The first principle of giving is that it always has to be motivated by love. If it's not motivated by love, even in terms of like all this Christmas stuff and presents we give to people, if it's not motivated by love, then there's no profit to it. But God says he loved first, and then he gave his only begotten Son. So he did this. He opened his hand, and he gave the world his Son. And he had to release his Son to do all the things that Jesus Christ accomplished. He released him, you know. He let him go out of his hand. He didn't say, "Well, I'm going to give my Son, but, you know, hold him back," right? He released him, and he had to trust that Jesus Christ would be absolutely obedient, that he would do everything that he was supposed to do, right? But he had to release it. And in that releasing, that what happened was that whosoever believeth on him should not perish but have everlasting life. That the result, the grace in a sense of what came back, was that when God released his Son, he got back millions of sons just in that. And those sons that believed on what Jesus Christ did, they got eternal life, which is a huge increase back, you know. So God knew that this principle worked, and he said it from the very beginning about how he was going to give his Son. So now go back to 2 Corinthians, because in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, there is a cycle of principles that I believe all these verses show. There's five different things, and they're like a cycle. And so you do the first one, you do the second one, third, fourth, fifth, and then it starts over again. I'm going to tell you what the cycle is first, and then we're going to look at them. The first one is they gave themselves to the Lord. The second one is that they were willing to give. The third one is they performed the giving. The fourth one is that after the giving was performed, then God poured out his grace. And the fifth one is that caused great thanksgiving back to God. So they were more willing to give themselves to the Lord, more willing of themselves to give, and they gave more. They had more grace being poured out, and there was more thanksgiving. And so you see, it went around like this. And in our lives, this principle, this cycle, absolutely works without fail every single time. And so if for whatever reason we do not have an abundance in our lives or seeing these principles in operation, then somewhere along the line of those five things, it's being broken. Where, like Bob was saying, you had your foot on the hose somehow. Well, it's easy to say, well, yeah, I guess I must have my foot on the hose. But where? Okay, so you just look at those five things that we're going to be talking about here, and you'll be able to see really quickly, oh, that's the one that I'm not doing. And so I think that this whole teaching and this principle of these principles is really going to help people, and I would really be just encouraging to you to go out and share it and share it especially this time of year, but share it throughout the year as well, because God's word never fails, and it works every time if we do this. So the thing going back to the Corinthians and what they weren't doing was, it wasn't that they had a big excuse about how they didn't want to give. They did want to give, because if you look over at chapter 9, verse 1, it says, "For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you." You know, I don't need to write to you because you wanted to minister to the saints. Verse 2, "For I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very many." Now what he's talking about is that over a year before this, the saints that were in Corinth and Achaia, they had decided, yeah, we're giving, we're going to help the people in Jerusalem, and we're going to collect this big offering. Well, a year before, they wanted to do it, but they never got around to actually doing it. And so the reproof in here is about how, hey, you got to understand this cycle, and then just get busy doing it. So now let's look at the first one. They gave themselves to the Lord and to us, it says. Verse 5. So going back to the example about the Macedonians, what they did first was, "This they did, not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God." First they gave themselves. It's exactly what Trina was singing about, which was so spectacular that she sang that song, "I give you my heart, I give you my soul." Everything in our life first has to be about God first. It has to be about praising God first. It has to be that we really acknowledge that everything does come from Him. Everything we have, everything we are, everything that is about our lives has come from Him to begin with. And so that's the first part. Not the first thing to just give. I mean, this picture is really wonderful about hope opening your hand. But you have to have something in your hand, right? Otherwise, it's just like, here I am, right? We have to give ourselves first to God in praise and thankfulness and honoring Him. So in order to get the cycle started, that's the very first thing. It's not giving first. It's acknowledging that He is the source of our supply in every category, whether it's financial or spiritual or anything. He is the source. So that's the very first thing. Keep your finger here. I'll show you a psalm that David did that is really wonderful. See, God never wanted the offerings in the Old Testament as much as He wanted the people's hearts. So even in the Old Testament, when God had set up the law saying, you know, you have to give this, you have to sacrifice this lamb here and this cow there and everything, that wasn't what He really wanted. He really just wanted the people's hearts. And that's what David says in Psalm 40. You can read the whole psalm. It's this wonderful psalm. Verse 1, "I waited patiently for the Lord, and He inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and He set my feet upon a rock and established my goings. And He hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise to our God. Many shall see it and fear and shall trust in the Lord. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust." Now go over to verse 6. "Sacrifice and offering thou didst not desire." Oh, really? But I thought that God wanted our tithes. Well, He does, but not first. See, if we don't give our hearts to Him first, then tithing doesn't matter one stitch. You can tithe and tithe and tithe and tithe, but if you don't give your heart first, it doesn't accomplish anything. So David recognized this. Sacrifice an offering thou didst not desire. Mine ears hast thou opened. Burnt offering and sin offering hast thou not required. Then said I, lo, I come. In the volume of the book it is written of me, I delight to do thy what? I delight to do thy will, O my God. Yea, thy law is within my heart. See, it's our heart. God looks on our heart. And he recognizes that we just want to love him, to praise him, to honor him for all that he has given to us. And when we do that, then it starts the cycle. All right? Back to 2 Corinthians. Now look at verse 12 of chapter 8. Because I said the second one is we need to have a willingness. And that's exactly what it says in verse 12. It says, for if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. So the willing part is first we give our hearts to the Lord, then we have to be willing. Now, remember what we read about how Achaia was willing. All right, they had prepared and they were willing. They had a desire to give. And I could look around this room and say, I would, you know, guarantee that all of you have a desire to give, you know, from even people that I don't know as well. I know that your hearts are there to be willing to give. But it's not about only being willing. It's also about looking at it like it doesn't matter how much it is. Because the willingness part gets stopped when I say, well, I'm willing, but I have all these bills to pay. And, you know, if I give to San Diego Biblical Studies Fellowship, well, you know, then I'm not going to have money to pay my credit card, or I'm not going to, you see, I mean, it starts going where the willing, it's easy to say, oh yeah, I'm willing, but when we start rationalizing in our minds about, well, I'll pay my tithe next week, or I'll give some extra next week, then the next week never comes along. The willing part has to be about acknowledging that God is first, and then you gear your mind up about, I will to do what God says to do. And that's it. Willing, see? I will do it. I will. And you prepare then in your mind. Like, you know, I came to fellowship today. We had just got paid last week. I said, I'm writing the check. You know, I don't let the days go by before, so I leave room in there to get talked out of doing the actual giving. So being willing is where most people get stuck. And if you think about it, the times where times in my life where things weren't going very well financially, when I looked at it, this was the place. Was in my heart I was willing, but I was fudging on it. And a lot of the things are the reason why I have learned some of these principles is that when my children were really young, I didn't have a whole lot of money or anything. And I spent almost a whole year one time just studying everything I could study about giving. I looked up every word. I read it over and over. Because I knew in my heart that I didn't have abundance. And I knew that that's what God's promise was. And I wanted to see it in my life. And that, over that period of time, it really changed my whole thinking about it. And it changed my life around. And then there was another period of time when there was a lot of pressure, and I was under a lot of pressure financially again. This was probably, 10 years later. And I did it again. I didn't study it quite so intensely, but that book called Enriched in Everything is the result of those years of study where I just knew that I had to get this together because when I was growing up, I didn't have very much. You know, I had one dress, one pair of shoes. You know, my family was not very well off at all. And I grew up with this kind of poverty mentality in my brain of like, well, you know, it's okay for other people to have abundance, but, you know, you're going to have to struggle all the time. Erase, 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 right? No, that's not true. But in order to get there, see, there's sometimes a period of time of a transition. So we apply these principles, they work. Every time, they work. So, now number three is perform the doing of it. So let's go, we're back in 2 Corinthians 8. Go back to 11. We're going to read this whole section here from 11 to 15. It says, now therefore perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance out also out of that which you have. Now, is it out of that which you don't have? No. The performance is out of what you have. Okay? This is very important to remember. Just keep reading, though. Verse 12, for if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. Remember the widow who put in the two little mites? Well, those were worth maybe half of a penny, those two little mites. And when Jesus Christ saw her do that, he said, she's put in more than the Pharisees did who were making a big clunk and putting in all these coins. Why? Because it was out of what she had, and that was not very much, and she gave a huge percentage of what she had, where the Pharisees were giving a very, very tiny little percentage and more of a just a token, because they, you know, they liked the show of hearing the coins clink in the treasury box, and that's what they were more concerned about. So the widow is the one who really gave. But go on here and read this. Verse 13, for I mean not that other men be eased and ye burdened, but by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may be a supply for their want, that their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be equality. As it is written, he that has gathered had gathered much had nothing over, and he that had gathered little had no lack. Now, whenever you read that phrase, as it is written, or as it said, or something, then we have to go back to the Old Testament to find where that verse is. This particular one, you can just jot it down. It's from Exodus 16, 18. And it's talking about when God gave manna to the children of Israel in the wilderness. And they were supposed to go and gather what they needed of the manna. And they had enough. So those who only needed a little gathered a little. Those who needed a lot gathered a lot. And nobody ever got missed out of how much they needed. There was always plenty. So the principle is God has this supply. It's, you know, we think, well, it's pretty unending. It's got a great, great supply. All right, so what you need is going to be there. What you need will be there. What you need will be there. He never has, there's never a lack. It's always exactly what someone needs. And we don't have to worry about there not being enough resources. Okay? So it's not about how much we give then either, because see, the single person in the wilderness example, they got enough manna for them. That's all they needed. But if they had a huge, huge family, then they needed a lot more. Two things. It's not about giving out of what you don't have. It's giving what you out of what you have. And then also that God has all the resources that we would ever need. So we don't have to worry about that part. But what we do need to do is perform and do the willingness part, where we actually perform the doing of it. And the key verse to that is in chapter 9, in verse 6. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also how?
Bountifully.
Every man, according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. Now, we probably heard other teachings before about this cheerful giver. It's from the Greek word hilaros. And you actually get Hillary, your name, from there. And it means cheerful, joyous, outgoing, you know, where it's done freely and with a joyful heart. But again, you can see the picture of the open hand, because if I'm cheerful about my giving, then I'm going to release my hand. I'm not going to try to hold it back. See, if I hold it back, I'm doing this, where I'm closing up my hand. But if I hold it open and I'm doing that with joy, then that's how we're supposed to perform it. And sowing bountifully means that. It really doesn't have to do with the amount at all. Because if I made $100 a week and I gave 20 of that, then I am doing bountifully. But if someone else made $1,000 a week and they only gave 10, then they're sowing sparingly, see? And they're holding back. They're holding back. Because very likely, if they were making $1,000 a week, they wouldn't need that much, right? So it's the idea of just being cheerful. Let it go out of your hand. To be a cheerful giver is let it go. Do it. Perform it. Don't hold it back. Just do it. And there's a beautiful verse, Deuteronomy chapter 15. You can keep your finger in 2 Corinthians still, but just look at this briefly. Deuteronomy 15 in verse 7. And this illustrates the part that it's not... It's about the open-handedness, and it actually says open hand in Deuteronomy here. Chapter 15, verse 7. If there be among you a poor man of one of thy brethren within any of thy gates, in thy land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thine hand from thy poor brother, but thou shalt open thine hand wide unto him, and shall surely lend him sufficient for his want in that which he wanteth. And so you see, it's you shall open your hand wide. Open your hand wide. That's how to do the performing. So don't sow sparingly, sow bountifully. But it's just a little bit different picture, because sometimes we hear these verses over and over again. He which soweth sparingly shall reap sparingly. Okay. But, you know, just get a different picture in your mind of saying, okay, if I really open my hand like this, then I won't be holding back. I'll be performing the doing of the giving. All right. Go back to 2 Corinthians 9 again here. Because the very next verse about the cheerful giver, after the cheerful giver, is verse 8, and it says, and God is able to make all what? Oh, grace. Grace abound towards you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. When we perform the giving of it, the next step is that God pours out his grace. My little $10 or whatever it is not going to make that big a difference in the scheme of the overall body of Christ. But because I give that $10, then God is able to pour grace out, not only to me, but also to everyone around me, and especially to the people that I gave it to. It's grace all around, see? All sufficiency to me, abounding to every good work, all sufficiency in all things, abounding to every good work. Verse 9 explains it even a little bit more. As it is written, oh, as it is written. So it must be in the Old Testament that it was written. He hath dispersed abroad. He hath given to the poor. His righteousness remaineth forever. Now, this is quoted from Psalm 112, verse 9. If you want to look at it, it pretty much says it exactly that way. But the context in Psalm 112 is pretty interesting because it's about, okay, let me read it. Psalm 112, verse 5. A good man showeth favor and lendeth. He will guide his affairs with discretion. Well, if we practice this cycle of giving, we're going to be guiding our affairs with discretion. Surely he shall not be moved forever. The righteous shall be in everlasting remembrance. He shall not be afraid of evil tidings, for his heart is fixed, trusting in the Lord. His heart is established. He shall not be afraid until he see his desires upon his enemy. When we operate these principles of giving, then we don't have to be afraid of enemies. We don't have to be afraid of anything, really, because part of the grace being poured out back to us is always God's protection. Grace, in every category, is what God pours back out to us, not just financial abundance. We give and we get financial abundance, that's true, but we also get peace, joy, rest. Mike did a fabulous teaching on the restful life the other night. That's one of the biggest keys to healing, is to just rest in what God has done for us. So it's grace being poured out on many, many levels. But keep on going in Psalm 112 there. It says, he hath dispersed, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness endures forever, his horn shall be exalted with honor. The most wonderful part of this grace is, you see the word righteousness there? His righteousness? It comes from the same root that you get almsgiving from. Righteousness here is being represented as your giving, your helping the poor. Because that's what almsgiving is, you know, giving to people that have need. And your righteousness or your almsgiving is going to endure forever. Why? Because God sees your heart, he sees what we're doing, he sees why we're giving, and then he stores up this whole bunch of rewards to honor us in eternity because of our giving. Because of giving and of caring. And so our giving, our righteousness, our righteous giving is honored forever. So it should make us want to give more, you see? It starts the cycle going where, like, oh, wow, when I finally see God's grace being poured out in my life, go, well, I want to do it more. I want to get to where I have more to give, because if I have more to give, then I'm, you know, stacking up some more rewards. Now, we don't give to get something, okay? And that's where this whole thing about not grudgingly or of necessity, because the world teaches us to be greedy, where, especially like this time of year, well, I'll give a present to you, but then you'll give one back to me. And so it's a give to get. And the way God does and teaches about giving is that it's always just giving with an open hand, and then as we're releasing it and actually performing it, then he is the one who pours back the grace to us. And the grace is so much greater and bigger, you know, in a sense, than we ever was what we gave, that then it causes number 5, which is this incredible thankfulness to rise up. Back to 2 Corinthians. We were at verse 10 there, 9:10. Now he that ministereth seed to the sower both minister bread for your food, multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causes through us what? Thanksgiving to God. For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. Because the grace is poured out, and then it just wells up inside of this incredible thankfulness. Oh my goodness, Father, I couldn't do it without you. Everything I do have is yours. Look at what you did. It was so far beyond my little piddly giving in every category that this thankfulness wells up. So you see, give yourself to the Lord. You're willing to give. You actually perform it. God pours out his grace. It issues in thankfulness. And the thankfulness issues in more desire to praise God for everything that he has done. And so more giving of my heart back to him. And it starts the cycle all over again. So if you keep that cycle going, if I keep that cycle going in my life, day after day after day after day, then there will be huge abundance. And there will be a supply to the saints that have need and to my life as well. And it will just cause great thanksgiving all the way around. Look, we got to read the rest of the chapter here. We were at verse 12. Okay, 13. Whilst by the experiment of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ and for your liberal, generous. Back to the idea of verse 1. For your liberal distribution unto them and unto all men, and by their prayer for you, which long after you for the exceeding grace of God in you. So this is supposed to be our prayer for each other, is that we would see this grace be poured out. You're never going to read 2 Corinthians 9:8 again exactly the same, because God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that you have all sufficiency. God is able to make all grace abound towards you when we do this cycle of giving. And we always have to keep that in context, even when we quote that verse. And that it's about other things as well. But it's about giving. It's the grace of giving. And I long after you that you see this exceeding grace of God in you. And that we, as a body, we can long together to see this abundance in our lives and in the lives of our fellow believers. And share it and teach it and help and grow. And you see how it relieves all the pressure about this stupid time of year? Doesn't matter. Verse 15, thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. If we just go back and remember, God so loved the world, he loved the world, that he gave his only begotten Son. He opened his hands and he released Jesus Christ to us. He lived his life. He did everything he needed to do. He was obedient in every single thing. And because of that, there was poured out back to God multiple sons and great rejoicing and thanksgiving all the time, because we have all eternity to look forward to praising God and thanking him and rejoicing over this unspeakable gift that he gave to us. So if we just turn around and we give a little bit of our resources, we give out of what we have, right? We're not ever expected to give something we don't have. But we start the cycle and just keep it going, because pretty soon you have more to give and you have more to give and you have more to give, and we will rejoice and be thanking God continuously for his grace being poured out. That's the grace of giving. Love you guys.